Meeting to order and start out with roll call. Representative Cornish.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Hillstrom.
Here.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Here.
Representative Considine. Representative Dean. Representative Frankie.
Here.
Representative Grossel.
Here.
Representative Howell. Representative Lomer.
Here.
Representative Lucero.
Here.
Representative Newberger.
Ready to serve.
Representative O'Neill.
Here.
Representative Pinto. Representative Ward.
Here.
Representative Zerwas.
Okay, quorum being present, we'll ask for approval of the minutes for February 8th. Anybody want to make a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Oh, again.
My voice got higher.
Representative Lomer moves the minutes for February 8th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carried. And today we have the Board on Judicial Standards Budget Review. Thomas, and pronounce your last name again. Vasily, Vasily. I don't want to butcher it too bad.
I'm not fussy, but it's Vasily.
Vasily. Okay, you've been before us before, aren't you?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, sir, go ahead.
I'm the Executive Secretary of the Board on Judicial Standards, and as my letter indicates, the Board has basically figured out that it would be able to live within the same budget next year as this year. So we are foregoing our request for a bump in the budget. And I'm happy to answer questions, or do you want me to give you a brief overview of where the money goes?
You go ahead and give your overview. And we usually just ask them as you go through instead of waiting until the end because...
Sure.
Yeah. Otherwise, we might forget the moment.
Well, feel free to interrupt me. Basically, the office itself, the staff is very small. It consists of me, my assistant, and a half-time staff attorney. And so it's a relatively small budget, and most about $330,000 a year for the office. And as you might expect, most of the money goes to pay the payroll. In addition, there's a $125,000 major case fund or a litigation fund. The legislature created that several years ago because this board unfortunately had a history of hiring counsel and spending money to prosecute cases before the legislature had appropriated the funds, because with a small agency, it's very, very difficult to predict what you're going to need next year for litigation, because it could be zero, it could be $200,000. You don't know whether a case is going to come in the door, a serious case, and you don't know if the judge is going to contest it. So there's a $125,000 fund that is replenished every year. It accumulates for several years. Very fortunately, in the last biennium, we've used only approximately $45,000 of that fund at the beginning of the first fiscal year. And basically, the reason is the same reason that we feel that we can live within our budget for next year. The number of discipline cases has dropped dramatically. We have had no contested discipline cases during the last 2 years. And we're hoping that we won't have any more in the following 2 years. It's too soon to see if this is a trend, but and it's too much to expect that it'll be zero in the future, but we're hoping that it will continue to be relatively low, and as a result, we can live within our current budget. And it's going to be a little tight in the second year of the biennium. We're not going to have a cushion that we were initially hoping for, but we've discussed this as a board and feel that we can do it.
Okay. Any questions? I think you broke the record for brief brevity. Any questions, members? All right. Well, thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Now we have the Department of Corrections budget request. Commissioner Roy and others, and whoever would like to begin, name and title. And go ahead, Mr. Roy.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Tom Roy. I'm Commissioner of Corrections. Seated to my left, Deputy Commissioner Carlson. Seated to my right, Assistant Commissioner Wojcik. The Department of Corrections is always focused on our mission of reducing recidivism by promoting offender change through proven practices during safe and secure incarceration and effective community supervision. Our presentation of the governor's budget supports this notion, and all of our requests that you will hear about today relate to our mission. Public safety is a high expectation of all of our citizens, and we believe our work in corrections as the final stage of our criminal justice system is critically important to our citizens. Our agency's responsibility for the supervision and incarceration of over 30,000 offenders is significant, and it certainly has impacts on the lives and safety of our citizens. Those citizens have given us a really important task, because 95% of our prison population will return to the community within 3 years. Our mandate is to return those individuals to the community in better shape than they came to us. This budget, in summary, has three major tracks. The first is supporting our infrastructure. We have buildings, we have technology, we have information and security systems that are archaic and need repair and or replacement. Our utilities, our operational costs experience the normal growth that all agencies have experienced. And throughout the state of Minnesota, we have 44 leased offices that represent our community services division, and of course those costs for those leases increase as well. Part of this budget, and a very important part of this budget, is pass-through money to the counties to support their efforts both in the county probation system and in the community corrections system. Between those two systems, they supervise more than 80,000 individuals. Another track relates to the physical needs of our offenders. They must have a nutritious diet, be clothed, be given medical care, and have a safe living environment. Their well-being is totally our responsibility while they are within our institutions. Most of these well-being concerns and requirements are a matter of law. We have no choice, and it's the right thing to do, and those laws and those needs and those practices are incorporated into our policies. Thirdly, we have a pretty significant request for security, case supervision, and behavioral health treatment staff. As we heard last week, about 11% of our population has significant and persistent mental health issues. We have lots of medical concerns with our population, and about 90% of our folks either abuse chemicals or are addicted seriously to different chemicals. Our programs, including work, education, and treatment, give those offenders an opportunity to change. Some take advantage of those opportunities and some do not. But for those that do participate in our programs, we can demonstrate success and a good return on investment. And that return on investment is even greater when we consider the human toll of victimization of crime. Our whole focus is preventing future crime. Overlaying all of these proposals is the recognition that we have an obligation to our employees. We have over 4,000 people that work in the Department of Corrections who work every day to create a safe environment both inside our facilities and in our communities. They are exceptional citizens and employees, and they truly want to make a difference in this world. And as you review our budget presentation this morning, I hope our mission comes to mind on every proposal, and I hope you can ask questions about how it relates to mission. We have, this past year, and we have talked about some of these already with you, but we are knee-deep in an accreditation process with the American Corrections Association. ACA sets national standards for how corrections departments should operate, how facilities should be structured and staffed in the programming. And we're about halfway through that initiative, and it'll be a couple more years before all of our facilities are accredited, but so far, so good. We recognize that lots of people come back for very short periods of time. Many of those folks, as violators that we talked about already with you, have chemical dependency issues. We have tried to acknowledge their short stay with us, but we don't want that to be wasted time. So we've developed a short-term chemical dependency program. We have talked about our restrictive housing reforms. We have a white paper that's available to all members that talk about the things that this paper addresses, the things that we've talked about for the past couple years, some of the initiatives that we've already started, and I think you will find that white paper very informative. We are a pilot state for Pell secondary higher education grants. The federal government has offered these grants to those that are incarcerated. We have affiliations with three colleges in Minnesota, and those enrollees are both, all those programs are fully enrolled right now. And as a result of last year's funding, we have the development of two urban hub centers. And a hub center basically is a consolidation of services to offenders to help them transition back into the community. So they get housing assistance, counseling, referrals to health care and chemical dependency programs. Our funds in the Department of Corrections are very, very heavy general fund. And I think we are number one as a department for agencies that have to use federal or general funds. Some agencies in the state get a lot of money from the federal government in their operations. We get some for special grants, but we rely on you folks for our operations. We have three major divisions. On the right, our correctional institutions are the majority of our budget. Our community services division at 23%, and community services, again, is basically probation and parole and pass through to the counties. And to keep our multi-million dollar organization running, we have to have operations support involving human resources, our information systems, and our technologies, all the things that a normal business operation has. So the services we provide, I've talked about the pass-through to counties at 14% of our total budget. That involves grants that will be talked about in a moment. But it's very significant pass-through money, especially for county operations. They look to us for their support, and we see the county probation system as allies in our mission, and without the county folks, we would expect our population in the prison to be far, far greater. And the far right is breakdown of our personnel costs related to our over 4,000 employees. So slide 6 and slide 7 are basically summary pages that might be useful to the committee for reference, and page 8 as well. We have four more items on page 8, And those basically are the summary of our requests. And at this point, I will turn to Deputy Carlson, who will go into detail of those 14 requests. And we have modeled this report to first show the problem that we're trying to address and what this budget request entails.
Go ahead with your name and title and begin. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Terry Carlson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Facilities Division for the Department of Corrections. Our first request is for $9.2 million this fiscal year to fund a deficiency in our offender health care contract. We've contracted with a private correctional health care management company since the late 90s. Since January of 2014, Centurion is our private contract healthcare management company. They provide a level of care to our system that meets our constitutional requirements, and that's a good risk management tool for us. This year, we have higher contract costs, more off-site trips resulting in claims, and higher prescription costs, and this is really a nationwide issue. It's not just the Minnesota Department of Corrections. We know that as individuals, our health care costs have been increasing, and that's, again, nationwide. And also, this is a nationwide issue for other departments of corrections. As I said earlier, we have a constitutional obligation to provide health care to those who are in our custody. So we are requesting $9.2 million to cover the deficit for this fiscal year, fiscal 17. We project that our funding will be depleted in April. At the same time, we are also continuing to push our contractor to provide care more efficiently. And an example of that is that we are going to be implementing more telemedicine within our facilities, which will save on off-site costs and enhance public safety. We're exploring how to provide other care on-site as well, chemotherapy, for example. We already do dialysis on-site. We continue to explore options for purchasing pharmaceuticals, as we discussed at length with the committee last week. The fiscal cost of our contract with Centurion is $36,600,000, and the Centurion contract covers on-site primary and psychiatric care, inpatient coverage if it's not covered by Medicaid, outpatient hospital care, specialty care, ancillary care like physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy, as well as utilization management and claims adjudication and pharmacy services. The majority of the increases in this contract are in the costs of pharmacy, specialty care, emergency room, and outpatient services.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For clarification, the budget will be depleted by April of 17. And that goes to June 1st or July 1st that you're talking about the year. What do you do then?
Mr. Chair and Representative Ward, that's why we're here today. We need this money. We need it soon. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner. Go ahead, Representative Hills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, do you anticipate that you're going to run a deficiency bill out of this committee with just the deficiency for this current biennium, or do you anticipate doing something else?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
That's a simple
answer.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Lisa Boychuk. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Operations Support. Our second priority in the governor's budget is for employee compensation. The request is for $47.63 million over the biennium. Our current funding levels do not support increased compensation costs. Without this funding, it's possible important programming, recidivism-reducing programming, could be reduced because we have to be able to pay for our staff. These increases will cover employer contributions for health care insurance and pension fund increases, any state and federal tax obligations we have, along with other salary and compensation related costs. We have 24/7 operations and over 4,300 employees that we have to be able to fund any negotiated and any other pension increases.
How accurate would you rate your deficiency estimation on a 1 to 10 scale?
Mr. Chair, with current conditions as is, without any additional negotiations made through the unions, I would say this is very accurate. We do not, in our agency, negotiate union contracts. That's done through MMB. And when any across-the-board increases are negotiated, that is not included in this budget request. So dependent on what is negotiated, there's a possibility we could be back next year asking for additional funding.
Commissioner, is it true that the governor could put salary subs in the budget request mm-hmm. if he wanted to? Haven't they done that in the past, either put them in or not?
Mr. Chair, I have not been aware that those anticipated increases have been included in a proposed budget request.
He did put something in for pensions, though, didn't he, built into the base of the different agencies?
Mr. Chair, there is money included in this budget for increased pensions. It would be more along the lines of across the board or cost of living increases that are negotiated with the unions.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Item number three, offender health care contract. The biennial request is $22.8 million. As the commissioner said earlier, a large percentage, about 95% of our offenders, will be returning to the community. And as a part of public health system, it's in everyone's best interest to return these offenders to our communities in a healthy state. Again, we have a constitutional obligation to provide care for the population. We are requesting $11.4 million annually to continue funding the private health care contract. The cost of the contract will increase by approximately 6% from fiscal 17 to the next biennium.
Ma'am?
Yes.
Commissioner, we have a question from Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned earlier that you do chemotherapy, you do dialysis. Are these prisoners incapacitated at this point in their life?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Considine, we have our medical director, but a simple answer is yes, some are incapacitated. We actually have a facility at Faribault. It's basically a nursing home, and some of these folks are bedridden, and some are in pretty tough shape.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Considine.
Would it be safe to say then if they were released, they would not pose a threat to the public safety?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that would clearly be an individual assessment of those folks. We have a number of, I'm thinking of a particular serial killer who is one of those folks.
Yeah, probably wouldn't want to release him on
probably anything. Not. It is... It varies. Our real problem with that population is that there's sometimes no other place to go. Their nursing care facilities tend to hesitate significantly about taking a serious offender in their buildings, and we actually have some prohibitions by law that they can't take sex offenders or predatory offenders. If the person gets extremely ill, and that's beyond our care inside of our facilities, I have the authority under law to do a conditional medical release. And at the end of life, that's not uncommon. But some of these conditions can continue for months. But and we do have people that die inside, but we try to get them in a hospice situation in the community if we possibly can. But we also have a hospice inside.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm just curious, what kind of off track a little bit, but if a family doesn't claim there's no relatives, where are they buried or cremated remains?
Mr. Chair, we have policy in place. The state has the responsibility for ensuring proper burial of people who have no family members, and we incur that cost.
But where are the remains?
Mr. Chair, I can get you that information. I don't know off the top of my head.
Well, I was just kind of curious if nobody claimed if there was a common place where they would put the remains of the deceased, but just curious. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is something that we probably should talk about at a different time, but as the Commissioner mentioned, we have a law so that offenders are not allowed to go to retirement homes, nursing homes, places like that. So as we have an aging population with the baby boomers, we also have an aging population of former offenders who don't have any place to go either as they age. So that's something that I think that we should talk about. They're in the community, they're productive, they're safe, not offending for long periods of time, but they can't get into a facility. And then they're homeless, or who takes, you know, how do they even get the care that they might be able to pay for?
Okay. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, our fourth request is for critical technology modernization. We are asking for $3 million, 1.5 each year. Our current staffing levels are not adequate to maintain our critical data systems. We develop and support over 150 internal applications that we use in the DOC and other local criminal justice agencies, along with the BCA, rely on our systems. They're facing obsolescence. They're written in languages that are old and will no longer be supported on the current Microsoft platforms. It's very key that these modernizations occur due to data security and possible data breaches. And it's actually quite essential for our day-to-day business. For example, we rely on the system with all these modules to do our daily counts of offenders, to track where offenders live, to track educational statuses, discipline. It tracks all kinds of information, and we would be in dire straits if we were not able to update these programs. Our fifth request is to maintain our current information technology services. Along with our partners at Minute, we rely heavily to make sure that all of our systems are in compliance with security. This has a lot to do with technology debt, which we talked about last week, making sure all of our equipment is updated and operational. This has been quite neglected area budgetary-wise. The agency heavily relied on year-end funding to try to fund these technology needs, and it wasn't enough. So, again, this is to ensure compliance with the criminal justice information system requirements and state security and accessibility standards.
Request number six is for the Prison Rape Elimination Act, $2.011 million for the biennium. In the past 3 years, all of our facilities have been audited and are compliant with the Federal Prison Rape Elimination Act, or we call it PREA. The federal PREA regulations for juvenile facility staffing ratios will come to be in effect as of October 1st of this year. This request is to bring our staffing into compliance with those federal staffing ratios at our Red Wing facility. It also provides funding for a project manager to oversee our PREA initiative. This position had previously had some federal grant funding, and also provides a staff for victim assistance to those victims, offenders of prison rape within our facilities.
Commissioner, I have a couple of questions. Yes. Representative Lucero, followed by Representative Dean on this subject? Or?
I'm sorry, I was short delay there, slight delay. I am going back to slide number four, or request number four, I should say, slide 12. And the question is, Mr. Chair, in regards to the systems that are facing obsolescence, and you're looking to update that, are you looking to update that from a hardware perspective, or are you looking to update, when you mentioned here that you have 150 internally developed applications, are you looking to make a migration to applications that are not internally developed and supported, to out of the box or something that's used across the industry?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is not, this request is not hardware. That's the number five. This request is for staff, software development, and we are looking both at, are there systems available that we could purchase versus building in-house? So it could be a combination of both, or it could be one, or it could be the other. So we are looking at all options, trying to figure out what is most cost-effective.
Okay. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Deputy Commissioner. So what is the current federal grant that we do receive for the PREA program?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, I don't have the specific amount that we receive from the federal government right now. We've received several federal grants to come into compliance with PREA, and they also assist with the funding of the project manager who's in place.
Just follow up, Mr. Chair. So is the amount of grant money that we receive or federal funding, I mean, is it approximate to what we're contributing as the state? Is it twice as much? Is it 50% as much? I mean, can you give me a sense of sort of how it relates to how we fund this portion of it?
Commissioner.
Pardon me. Our finance director would have the specific information. I don't know if he'd have it right at this very minute. We do contribute state money also to our PREA initiative, and that's part of the, you know, how we can come into compliance. Having a project manager overseeing this function has been very significant to our success in compliance. Also, currently, our victim services unit has this as an add-on responsibility for them, and it's an unmanageable workload, so having additional resource in that area would be very beneficial to the victims of sexual assault in our facilities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm actually going to bring you back to Representative Lucero's question. Just a follow-up on that, the $3 million, and so to clarify, that's primarily for staff. Okay, and so then I'm looking here, and that's 12 FTEs. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is correct.
Okay, because I think my math is that's $250,000 per FTE.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that total dollar amount actually includes money for consultants also.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Commissioner, go ahead with your presentation.
A little bit more on the PREA request, Mr. Chair. If we don't comply with the PREA ratios by October 1st of 2017, up to 5% of criminal justice-related federal funds that go to the Department of Public Safety in the Office of Justice Program Unit get diverted from their intended purpose to become available for us to use to come into compliance with PREA standards. However, that federal grant money cannot be used to fund permanent staffing needs or construction needs for PREA. So we would use those kinds of funds for training more staff on PREA, getting more information out to the offender population. So it doesn't really serve the long-term goal. And that's, you know, it's diverting money from the Office of Justice Program to give out to local units and other victim services groups. So we'd like to avoid having that money be diverted. The other option is, if we're not in compliance as of October 1st, would be to reduce our capacity at the Red Wing facility so that we are in compliance with the staffing ratios.
If you did that, where would the juveniles go?
Mr. Chair, that's a perfect question. And these particular juveniles, as you know, are right on the edge of perhaps more serious adult criminal conduct. And we serve the entire state. And the Red Wing facility, for many counties and for the whole state, this is the last stop for juvenile offenders. And we feel that a reduced population there would impact those counties, and I can't give you an adequate answer as to what those counties would do. I would guess maybe some of those kids would be certified immediately into the adult system. Some may be placed out of state in a facility that could accept them. We've had juvenile facilities that have closed around the state recently that in the past have taken these kinds of kids. So the statewide capacity for residential placement for these types of kids, we sometimes are the only option. So it would impact the counties significantly.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm imagining that placing them out of state is considerably more expensive than your budget request. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, it's not atypical to have a $300 to $400 per diem for out-of-state placements. And kids cost a lot.
As we're switching chairs, I'll do a follow-up. It would seem to be the perfect definition of penny wise and pound foolish, then, not to move forward with that budget request. Thank you.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner and others, you have been very strong supporters of youth intervention programs, and looking at all of these costs, and you guys do good work. You have a big job to do, and I would like you to have the resources that you need to do that. And I know that your ultimate goal is to, you know, ideally work yourselves out of a job. Is there any better way to do that than to invest in youth programs?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I absolutely agree that the further we get upstream in prevention work through human services, through youth intervention programming, so many kids at a very young age are in a situation where things start to snowball in their lives, and pretty soon school becomes a problem, family life becomes a problem, use of chemicals becomes a problem, and pretty soon they end up in our correctional facilities. And anything that can be done in the community to prevent that, I support wholeheartedly.
Okay, Commissioner, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, our seventh request is for operating costs for offender food, utilities, and lease of space at 4.9 for the biennium. Within this request, we have $600,000 annually that will go to feed our nearly 10,000 offenders three times a day. This brings our food per diem rate up from $3.29 a day to $3.45 a day. And it's a meager cost, but it will go a long way to increasing the quality and the calorie requirements that were under for our offender population. 1.4 million annually also goes to facility utility and maintenance budgets. On average, utility costs have increased about 2.5% per year, and we haven't had an increase in our budget for utilities for at least the last 10 years. $450,000 annually goes to leased costs for nearly 44 field offices and our central office. Lease costs have risen by about 6.4% per year over the last 5 years. And we're just no longer able to fund these increasing costs with our within our existing budget.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, could you tell us, because I believe we just took this food service piece in-house instead of contracting. Can you tell us what the difference is in cost from when it was in-house to now contracting that out? Do you have those numbers with you?
Mr. Chair and Representative, the food cost itself has always been our responsibility. And so the cost, and that's what we're asking for in this budget. We're not asking for money for staff, which you're right, we converted from a contract to state employees.
Mr. President Hall?
Thank you, and but I'd still like to see those numbers, what the difference in cost of running that in-house as opposed to the contract in previous years.
Okay. You can provide that, Commissioner?
We will provide that information.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead with your presentation.
Item number 8, operating costs for capital bonding projects. We request $524,000 for the biennium to fund the staffing needs associated with two previously funded bonding projects. This request is for a total of 3.5 positions. 2.5 of those positions would go to Shakopee to help with the operation of the newly constructed perimeter fence. One of those positions is an electronic specialist. This is a fence that has a lot of technology associated with it, and so we need another person to help with those issues. And then also they now have a secure access at their truck gate vehicle entrance, and we need staffing to operate that. One FTE of this request goes to the St. Cloud facility for a maintenance position to assist with the newly created infrastructure mechanical building that is a part of that project that is ongoing right now. The building is going up.
Ms. Bohan.
Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner Ron Solheid, my area of responsibility is the Community Services Division. This slide represents our request for increased funds for community offender supervision. As noted in the slide, there are actually over 110,000 individuals under supervision in the community. Caseloads for our agents are 2 to 3 times higher than recommended standards for high and very high-risk offenders, as recommended by the American Probation and Parole Association. So what these funds will do will deliver additional agents for the Department of Corrections for the 54 counties that we provide supervision to these individuals in. And it also includes a commensurate increase for our county partners for both the Community Corrections Act counties. And as you can see by the table below, that's about $3.15 million per year for the Community Corrections Act counties, which provide supervision in 33 counties, and an increase for our county probation offices in 26 counties. So it all total equals about a 5.4% increase for each of the jurisdictions providing community supervision. We've also included an increase in funding for outpatient sex offender treatment. Offenders in the community on probation or supervised release who have been identified as needing sex offender treatment have some ability to utilize these funds. We have about $2.4 million total. This would increase that total to allow us to provide more outpatient sex offender treatment in the community and reduce some of the waiting lists that we're experiencing there.
Representative O'Neill with this question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we have 110,000 folks on probation and parole, and some of them are on for very extended periods of time, has there been conversations, and I know you don't make the rules, we do, but about maybe shortening those times so they're not on probation for 10, 15, 20 years? And do you know of the effectiveness of keeping people on probation or parole that long?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, we actually did have a study this last year regarding earned compliance credit, which kind of got to some of those issues with how long probation is, probation, pronounced probation sentences are in Minnesota. A report has been provided to both the House and the Senate with regard to some of our findings. And some of the consensus of the group, which was a large group of stakeholders, really was that pronounced probation in many cases is quite long in Minnesota. And looking at how there are disparities between judicial districts with regard to pronounced probation was one of the topics that was covered as well. So that report is available for your review. We did have some consensus around recommendations with either potentially capping felony probation, and this was specific to felony probation, either recommendations to potentially cap felony probation sentences at a certain number of years or look at the potential to create some type of a guideline for felony probation sentences as well. We do know that with extremely long probation sentences, typically if you're going to have a violation, it's going to occur within the first few years, and people who are on for a lengthy period of time really end up on more administrative caseloads over time simply because they are compliant and they're not violating their probation.
Representative Hilsprung.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's nothing in the statute, though, that prohibits you from making a motion to the court to discharge if you believe that someone doesn't deserve to be on probation. Doesn't that currently happen in some counties? And if that's the case, do you have a specific policy by which you do that, or do you, just as a matter of practice, keep them on administrative probation and not file that documentation for them to be discharged early?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilstrom, yes, we do. The Department of Corrections in the 54 counties where we provide supervision, we have a policy that's consistent in all of those counties with regard to recommending early discharge. The Community Corrections Act counties as well have policies with regard to recommending early discharge to the courts. So that is a decision left up to each judicial district as to what criteria they require for early discharge. It's up to the bench. But about 64%, I believe, was the number of persons on felony probation of more than a year do receive an early discharge.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillsborough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And do you keep track of that information, and would you be able to give us information about what kinds of crimes are in the percentage that don't get discharged early? For example, someone ends up on probation or parole for a significant a crime that maybe has probation for 20 or 30 years. If those are the crimes that they're not discharging early, do we know that, or is no one keeping track?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, that information is through the courts, and essentially in our study that we did find that there are some that are excluded, typically those with serious sex offenses, significant offenses with violence. We do have some offenders who, as example, have have extensive probation as a result of being on probation for many times, you know, in the past. And so, again, it's really informed by local policy with prosecutors and the bench, typically, with what the criteria are for early discharge.
Mr. Chair.
President Hilfer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if the bench is deciding that they shouldn't be discharged early, then do you still put them on administrative paper? Or once the bench decides they're not going to be discharged early, do you then keep them more on a fuller supervised probation?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, that would be on an individual case-by-case basis based upon the type of offense and the risk level that the individual presents as to what level we're supervising them at.
It's our call.
It's essentially our call at that point.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, of these early discharges, do you know what percentage are denied of the requests, so we have an idea if the judges are following the recommendations or are they just coming up with their own information?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I do not have that information currently available, but we could see what we could pull from.
Okay. I'd appreciate to get that information.
Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner.
Item number 10, expand mental health services. As we all know, addressing the needs of the mentally ill offenders, especially those who we house in our restrictive housing units, is a national priority. And we had a great discussion about that dialogue at the last hearing. And we appreciate your interest and concern. Certainly within our facilities, there are more complex mentally ill offenders. Today, we have a number of offenders who have very serious self-injurious behavior, and about 11% of our population is seriously and persistently mentally ill. There are changes to professional and community standards that must be met. Our American Corrections Association and the Department of Justice has put into place standards and guidelines for us to operate under, and we are working on compliance. So this request is for $3.15 million for the biennium to enhance and increase our capacity to provide health services programming at the Oak Park Heights facility. We believe that this request will reduce those trips to the hospital and self-injurious behavior, provide increased release planning for our serious and persistently mentally ill offenders, and provide them increased access to mental health and psychiatric services.
Commissioner Representative Zerwas has a question.
Well, I think just more of a comment, a brief comment. I've met with the commissioner and his staff over the last month and a half, and have been working with the folks from NAMI, Minnesota, and just want to thank the commissioner for this portion in the budget, and really just encouraging as we move forward to look at finding a way to codify some policies and procedures around segregation and isolation in the restrictive housing unit into state statute, and really put up some guardrails. And I know we've met on a bill that was introduced earlier this week, and we're going to continue to work on finding common ground and language on that. It's this, unfortunately, is likely not going to be a cheap endeavor as we look at how to best treat people with mental illness that we are charged with incarcerating and protecting. But it's the right thing to do. And I guess I would challenge us that if it was a group of individuals that we were holding in our prisons that had any other medical condition, diabetes, congestive heart failure, we wouldn't isolate them in a room and just think that it would take care of itself. We would treat those patients and we would treat their medical condition. And so that's what we have to do. We have to find a way to do that. It's a heavy lift. That's on us. And I look forward to working with the commissioner and staff.
Commissioner? Oh, just a second. We have, unless you want to respond to that, we have Representative Pinto with the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, testifiers, my apologies for coming in so late, but I did want to ask about a little bit about this slide. There's a reference to behavioral health staff, and I guess I'm just wondering, does that mean mental health professionals, chemical dependency counselors, maybe all of the above? What, I think that that's not a usual term, so what does that encompass?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pinto, this request includes behavioral health staff. The classification title is Corrections Program Therapists. A bachelor's degree is required for those positions. Corrections Program Therapist 3s, master level degrees required for them. And also a couple of Corrections Program Therapists 4, independent licensure is required for them. It also includes a Psych 3, a doctoral level licensed psychologist, and a corrections program director position where independent licensure is required. This request also includes additional security staff to help move these offenders who may have violence and behavior disorders as well, to get them out of their cells and into programming and to maintain order, while these treatment staff are providing individual and group therapy to them. Thanks for the question.
Mr. Chair, so I guess I'm just not familiar with that term, corrections program therapist. So I gather it encompasses mental health, chemical dependency, all those things. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is correct.
And then finally, on that, are you anticipating increasing the number of inmates who can be treated, or providing more treatment to a current number? Or sort of, what kind of practical effect will this have in terms of those sorts of issues?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pinto, it provides increased service to more offenders, and it provides more comprehensive service at the same time.
Representative Pinto?
That's all. Thank you.
Okay, commissioners.
Item 11, restrictive housing reform, $3.77 million for the biennium. The majority of the funds in this initiative are used to hire staff to advance our restrictive housing reform project initiatives, and will include cognitive skills programming for the offenders, mental health counseling to those offenders who need it, and also some of the funding will be used for some one-time equipment. This proposal provides for programming at our three highest custody facilities, Oak Park Heights, Stillwater, and Rush City, to reduce offenders' risk of engaging in violent behavior. And it would reach about 125 offenders at any given time.
Mr. Chair, members, item 12 is a request that we have had our eyes on for quite a while. Over the 6 years that I have been with the department, I have heard from staff individually and as groups, and it varies from prison to prison, and they have requested additional staff for their very important work. To get to the bottom of the story of what is actually needed, and to be able to present you with some credible information about staffing, we engaged staff at the National Institute of Corrections, who are trained and have a staff assessment model for security staff.
And this request responds to the results of that assessment. These folks spent time in our facilities. We had a team in each facility, and we think we came up with a very credible product, and it demonstrated a significant need for us. It creates, obviously, corrections officers are a major part of this request, and also related to the security of the facilities, we have some critical security needs in terms of controls, sensors, cameras, and perimeter detection devices. The staffing report is very detailed. It's about 4 inches thick, and it not only looks at specific posts and what is required to staff a post, but it also looks at other staffing strategies that are potentials to make staff more efficient. We could do a whole presentation on that particular report, but Deputy Carlson will speak to the exact numbers that this request relates to.
Mr. Chair, for the first year of this request, we would have $1 million annually for those security system upgrades that the Commissioner spoke about, and also this would fund 20 FTEs for correctional officers. In fiscal 19, it would be a $1 million annual for the security system upgrades and 13 additional corrections officers, bringing that total to 33. In the tails of this request, the total staffing amount goes to about 46 FTEs for corrections officers. So it's a partial request based on the staffing analysis that was completed, but it's a good beginning to meet the needs. Item 13, medical and nursing services, $2 million for the bienniums. As I've stated previously, our offenders are the only population with a constitutional right to health care. And our population is increasing and getting older and having more ailments. This request is for nursing staff to ensure quality health care consistent with professional and correctional health care standards and to provide optimal patient outcomes in an efficient delivery system. These resources will allow us to provide increased clinical services on site, improved oversight of our clinical operations, will increase accountability and expand our management of chronic disease and quality assurance programs. These were stated specifically in the 2014 Office of Legislative Auditor report. And funding in this area will improve risk management strategies for our agency. This request does include 24-hour nursing at our St. Cloud facility, provides additional resources at our Challenge Incarceration Program and at our Lino Lakes facility. And so the request is for $2 million for the biennium.
Okay, Commissioner, I have a couple of questions. Representative Johnson, followed by Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, just going back to the security and staffing issues. I'm sorry for jumping a little late and being a screen behind, but I was double-checking a date. On March 23rd, I'm wondering if you can tell me what happened between March 23rd of 2016 and now on the staffing issues. I have a letter, and it's at home in my file drawer from the unions, saying that there is no staffing or safety issues in the prisons at this time. So I'm just wondering what happens between then and now.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, just to clarify, that letter said there are no staffing concerns?
That is correct. That's the date that we were talking about allowing you to talk to the owners of Appleton about leasing space, and they said that they, because one of the reasons I was looking in favor of that is because of the safety issues and the staffing issues in the prisons. But I received this letter on that same date during that meeting that there were no staffing issues at the prisons.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, obviously I'm not familiar with that letter, but we have a lot of confidence in the National Institute of Corrections analysis that showed that we needed over 100 officers to appropriately staff our facilities. And I, that letter writer, I have no clue who that is, but it sounds like he may or she may be an outlier. I almost on a daily basis hear from staff about the challenges of staffing appropriately, especially when we have lots of medical emergencies that we have to respond to. When we place a person in a community hospital, that requires 24/7 observation by officers. So we struggle every day to staff our prisons, and that's as much as I can say.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, I'll get a copy of that for you.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
Representative Dean, and then Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So looking at medical and nursing services, I'm assuming that includes dental care as well as part of those services.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, medical and nursing services does include dental. We don't have a specific request in this budget to increase dental service.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, so that would remain the same, I'm assuming, moving forward. And as someone who's suffered dental pain throughout my life, I would think that the last thing you would want is an inmate that's suffering from dental pain, to be honest. Thank you.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnston, I'm sorry if I just missed it, but did you the origin of this letter?
Representative Johnston?
It was from the union. A couple of the members of the union brought that to me and left it at my office here that day.
Thank you.
Okay, no more questions. Go ahead.
Our final request, item number 14, is for offender case management services, $3.456 million for the biennium. Enhanced case management services for our very high and very high risk offenders has been proven to be effective in reducing recidivism and aids those offenders in successful transition from prison to community. We are requesting this amount to add staff, case management staff, and some support staff to give a more reasonable caseload for those case managers who deal with the high and very high risk offenders. This gives us the capacity to use these services of enhanced case management for 840 more offenders. Our current staffing level of case managers is about 119 in our facility, and we want to improve our bench strength and capacity for this enhanced case management service. Again, as we've talked in our presentations, you remember that we have a very high churn in our facilities. We have about 8,000 releases every single year, and our case managers provide the planning and assistance to those offenders to be successful upon release. And that's why this request is important.
Mr. Chair, members, that concludes our budget presentation. As I started this presentation, I assured you that everything within this request relates to our mission, and we aren't building an empire. We aren't asking for major expansion of our institutions. We believe that our strategies of providing services and programs within our agency, that we can bring our numbers down, and have them manageable. We have seen, and I mentioned last week as well, the drug reform that you folks crafted last year has brought our projections down. We are seeing less use of the county jails, and we hope that we will see less return of violators. And with these expanded services that Representative Zerwas referenced earlier, in terms of our restrictive housing policies, we believe that we can have healthier institutions. We can believe and do believe that we will have less future crime, and that is our mission. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions from members? Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner members, when you look at the $125 million total, and that's huge. And I guess my comment is, this is the most expensive place that we can intervene in the criminal justice system. Is at the very end, when they come into our custody and they're the commissioner's responsibility. And so I think as we craft a budget that meets the needs of the Department of Corrections, and Mr. Chairman, as you craft your budget for public safety, I guess I want to echo a little bit of what Representative Ward said earlier, but having an investment up front, upstream, in youth intervention and other programs to catch offenders early, before there, I mean, for lack of a better way of saying it, before there are problem, and before there are problem for a long time to pay for. You know, there's a lot of times where people just need to get straightened out and a mentor and a job and a path in life that doesn't end up in Stillwater or St. Cloud, you know, under the commissioner's purview. So $125 million is a huge ask. It's a huge amount of money. And I think the only way you avoid that is you invest before people end up under our care.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, my first comment is the same as Representative Sirwas. And for the new members of the committee, last year we had that group of conservative corrections people. I'm speculating that you had asked them to come in from Texas. You remember which one I'm talking about? And he unequivocally said that the best bang for our dollar was youth intervention programs on the front end, which was an interesting alliance for that. Secondly, I just find it amazing that you can feed prisoners on $3.45 a day. I can't take one of my granddaughters out for a snack for that. And if you've ever had a teenage boy, yeah, that's not even the milk bill. I'm a little concerned about the letter, Representative Johnston. I think I've mentioned this before, but my daughter works at Shakopee, and she's now been there 7-8 years. And just before she went on medical leave, I can tell you that she was being forced into overtime because of shortages. And she wasn't at all happy when she was 7 months pregnant and having to do that. And it's a routine thing there, is what I'm being told. We'll chat then. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. If there's no more questions, thank you very much for your presentation. Good to have you back. And meeting adjourned.